Welcome back to the Tea Talk Podcast, brought to you by Flagstick.com. Stefan Tiedorf here with my co-host, Scott McCloud. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I am great. And we're going to start this week with a new segment. And it's going to be called, What Are You Drinking Today, Scotty? And why? So what do you got today, Scott?
Ooh, I got a combo. I got a little Lavazza coffee to start.
Okay.
And then I'm into a little Strongbow.
Okay.
Old edition to finish up. How's that? How about you?
I like it. I am going somewhat, I'm going to say, in the right geography. I have
local?
Local to who I'm going to talk about, sort of. I have a Guinness that I have just opened up and that I am pouring properly into a can, which means it is just completely turned over until it is empty. This is from the factory. And I'm doing
this. Thank God for widgets.
Pardon?
Thank God for widgets.
Yeah, and I'm doing this for our girl, Mel Reed, who picked up her first win on the LPGA Tour from the United Kingdom. And obviously the reason why we are celebrating Mel Reed's win, like Mel Reed did, is for our guy Ryan DeVoe on the bag. That is basically the only golf I watched this weekend. A couple other things, but I could not get my eyes off that. You know, even put football on the back burner for a while. Mel's been out on the tour forever, finally grinded out a win. Dez has been out on the LPGA Tour for a long time. It's hard to be a caddy for a long time on the LPGA Tour and not have a win. The paychecks aren't really that big out there. So got to say, it was a proud moment for me watching a close buddy like him pick up his first win. What were your thoughts on the tournament and that combo?
Yeah, I was just excited. I can remember years back sitting with Dez in Denny's talking about going out and being a caddy on tour and what it was going to be like. We were talking about, you know, being out on the road on Symetra Tour and what a grind it was. That was his very, I think it was his first year doing it. And, you know, it was a lot of hardship and didn't know if he was going to stick with it, but he loved it. And, you know, to get him a win like that for them was amazing. The celebration was awesome.
Best celebration I've seen, and I'm biased, but if somebody can find a better celebration on the 18th hole than what just happened, men's tour, women's tour, any tour, maybe some mini tours, but on the big two tours, or in the European tour, I haven't seen it, because they had not only one champagne shower, three champagne showers, beers being chugged and champagne on the actual 18th green. It was just amazing. That easily best Sally I've ever seen.
Yeah, and Mel's super popular on tour. Obviously, we saw that by the response on social media. You know, six-time winner on the Ladies European Tour. Certainly, as you said, a player that's been out there playing the LPGA Tour that, you know, was deserving of a win, was in the position a few weeks ago and sort of fell back. But, you know, she's got it under her belt now, and look out. I mean, you get that first one, and I think she just kicked open the door.
Absolutely, and she's been on fire, too. Couple people, I guess, threw a couple dollars on her this week and were winning like in the thousands. Like, she was in the mix the last 3-4 weeks. So to be able to still have 100-1 odds, just no respect for her. Obviously, her odds are much better this week going into the PGA this week, which fellow Canadian Nate Blasco was on the bag last year for Hannah Green when they won that. So exciting to watch them defend that this week, and more major championship golf right around. This has been great. I've with all the other sports kind of wrapping up, at least golf's still continuing. We used to hate the wraparound season, but right now I'm the biggest fan of the wraparound season because it's giving me something else to watch. I mean, football's on TV, but like, you know, hockey's wrapping up. We got the draft on tonight. We actually have Chris Cook from the Kingston Frontenacs, equipment manager amongst them, plus many other teams, which we'll get to later. And we're going to talk about the draft amongst other things. Maybe we'll talk about the idea of a golf draft one day. I'm excited to watch some PGA, the PGA Championship, the KPMG Women's PGA, and Hannah Green defending it and seeing if Dez and Mel are still drunk when they get to their first tee on Thursday.
Yeah, it's gonna be a scene for sure. I think the players are loving it already. They're at Aronimink, which is a really tongue twister in Philadelphia. Great old Donald Ross course that was renovated by Gil Hance a few years ago, and you know, this is a fabulous design. And you know, they've been doing this the last bunch of years with KPMG as a sponsor. They finally got the quality of golf courses, you know, that they deserve on that tour. Hazeltine last year, and then obviously up to the Philly area where there's some amazing golf courses. And Hannah is playing with Danielle Kang and Brooke Henderson for the first 2 days. They're part of the feature pairings. They're out in the afternoon on Thursday, and then in the morning on Friday. So three out of the six in that group will be Canadians, with two Canadian caddies in you know, Brittany Henderson and Nate Blasco, obviously, and obviously Brooke playing there as well. So
yeah, it's
playing fun
long
to
too, right? Like Brooke said something about having to hit more hybrids this week. Scores are gonna be high, gonna be tough. I look forward to it. It was a great tournament to watch last year. Just remember that up and down from that bunker shot Hannah hit on 18. Like, what a great, like, that bunker shot she hit last year to seal that win was so impressive. Like, a bunker shot to win, like, you got to get it up and down to win. The pressure there, that's insane. So I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk a lot more LPGA next week, because we will have Dez and Mel on next week to talk about that first win. Unfortunately, I don't think they were legally allowed to be recorded this week. I think the party still lives on, but they're also getting ready for the PGA. So just a little busy, let's say that. Sergio Garcia picked up a win over the weekend. First win since the Masters, which really shouldn't surprise anyone, considering the last couple of years of Sergio, we've talked about everything but his golf. It's all about him doing his best Patrick Reed in the bunker after not getting out of bunkers, him spiking golf balls into greens, all sorts of nonsense. Everything that was old Sergio, that people think is the only Sergio, this kind of psycho guy, but you know, he dialed it in. He turned back the clock, and nice to see him win, and hopefully he doesn't disappear for another 10 years like he usually does.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's had a win worldwide every year, I think, the last decade now. That's his 11th PGA Tour win. And, you know, the way he did it as well, I mean, he relied on exactly his forte in his game, his ball striking, and, you know, that helped him out there. And he hit that last approach shot in there to 2 feet 6 inches and made that putt. And he was putting with his eyes closed this week, which was a big storyline there.
Apparently he was doing at the Masters.
He was, yeah. So you know, it's not new to him, although a lot was made of it. And you know, it was an emotional win for him. He talked about it afterwards. He dedicated it to his dad, who was his coach, and his uncles. He had two uncles pass away from COVID-19, so he was very emotional at the you know, the end of this tournament and getting this win. And you know, no matter what you think of Sergio, you know, I've had some positive interactions with him over the years, and certainly, you know, some of that behavior, not really a fan of, but on the other side of it, this is a guy who's super talented. And, you know, I think a lot of us cheered for him when he won his Masters, because obviously he had struggled in the majors, and for him to finally get one. So, you know, people are going to be divided on this one, but I think it's a great one. And we said that the Sanderson was going to be that type of event where you're going to see a player either change their career or make a big comeback. And certainly that's what it was.
Now, I've heard mixed things from people inside, you know, the ropes, that, you know, I mean, it's Sergio. I guess mixed things make sense. But, you know, a couple of guys said he's one of the sneaky, nice guys out on tour. And when we were at the Canadian Open, we saw him taking around a young Spanish guy in a practice round. And I think he does work with a lot of the Europeans. And I think he's a good guy. I've seen some videos out there. I mean, obviously, sometimes these are done for good PR after some bad PR, which they come out at the right times. But, you know, after a win, you don't need other good PR. So it was nice to see you guys come out of the woodwork with these good stories. You obviously had a good one on flagstick.com's Twitter. But yeah, it was a good week. I love watching Sergio just hit some irons. He just strikes it. I still have no idea how he hits the cut with that driver swing. It's just, it's insane. It's just like his swing with the driver, but hey, it works.
Yeah, it does work. And yeah, you mentioned there, I tweeted a circumstance from 5 years ago when I was at Riviera. I may have mentioned it on the podcast before, but, you know, just walking with Sergio during the Pro-Am, and I happened to have a little thing from my wife for her class at school called Flat Stanley, this little paper character that, you know, you take it around the world and it visits places and it goes back and tells stories to the kids. And I took it with me that week with the intentions of, having some players maybe do something, probably Canadian players, really, if they could get a picture with it or whatever, and have me walking with Sergio during the Pro-Am. And, you know, everything was pretty friendly for 5 or 6 holes. And I thought, oh, I may as well ask him. And I said, hey, Sergio, can you do me a favor? And, you know, I explained the story and he loved it. I mean, anything for kids. I said, hey, this is for my wife's class. This little, you know, paper character goes around the world and then goes back and tells stories. And he's like, that's fantastic. Here, I'll be happy to get a picture with it. And then, you know, we're partway into it. And he's like, no, wait. And I'm like thinking, oh, has he decided not to do it? I mean, he's in the middle of this practice round. And he tells his caddy, bring the bag over, and he makes sure the bag is there because he said, the kids are not going to know who I am. So he knew the parents would probably know who he was, but he knew the kids probably wouldn't. And if they were going to see the picture, then it was easier for them if his name, Sergio Garcia, was on the bag, and then they would have some context. So, you know, smart thinking by him, obviously a little bit more thoughtful than some people think he is. So, that would be one of my positive experiences with Sergio.
Yeah, and I'm pretty open about people that I haven't had positive situations with. I think you're a little tighter-lipped about those things, where I will let them go right away. But I can't, as I said, I've only heard good things from inside the ropes about him, so I'm not going to say anything bad about the guy. But let's talk about this eyes-closed putting. As a coach... And maybe there's somebody out there listening that's like, they're desperate. They're like, oh man, maybe I got to do this. At what point would you recommend closing your eyes when putting, if ever, in an actual round of golf?
Well, I don't think it actually makes a difference whether you have it open or closed. I mean, in most cases, if you're making a perfectly balanced stroke, the stroke is just basically passing through where the ball is. So your eyes are maybe helping you make some micro adjustments. I think for most people, if they do it during a practice round or a practice, you know, when they're practicing, they're going to get a better feel for what's going on with their body and feel what's going on as far as their stroke is concerned. So, I do eyes closed drills all the time, full swings, chips, pitches, putts, all sorts of things. Now, it's pretty brave to go out and probably do it in a tournament. I think I think he's obviously at a point in his career where, you know, he's willing to try stuff. He's not afraid to do it. And obviously it's worked out for him. So I don't look at it so much as desperation as some people might think it is. I just think it's another way to get the job done. And he felt it was right for him.
Well, I was watching with my dad this weekend. And he said, you know, apparently he's been doing this for a while. Why is he doing this? Oh, he had the yips or whatever. And my dad has openly struggled with the yips with his chipping. And I said, maybe you should try chipping with your eyes closed. And it probably would be better, because I think sometimes he does the double hit quite often. And it'd be pretty impressive if you double hit with your eyes closed. That's just talent. I think you could sell that on, go on that show, where they do all the talent. America's Next Talent. I forget what it's actually called. It's like American Idol of talent. He could go do that. Close his eyes, put a blindfold if he can get this ball 2 times with 1 swing. But Sergio, great career. Do you think, where's your head at? Because when he first came out, it was like, is he going to compete with Tiger? Mm. It's safe to say he never got close to that. But in the end, do you think he would have signed off on this career at this point back then, which obviously only included 1 major, but, had a Players, and I forget how many wins he has total on the PGA Tour.
11 on the PGA Tour, but he's got a bunch in Europe as well, obviously.
$100 million probably in the bank just from winning golf tournaments, you could say.
Yeah, I think, I think when he came out, obviously he was pretty brash, pretty confident, which was fair based on, his talent level. So I'm sure at that point, he probably wouldn't have been happy with where his career has gone now. But I think when you look at it in a rearview mirror, if he sits back and looks and, he got that major, married now, 2 kids, I think you realize that, maybe it's not the greatest thing in the world to, chase, the records of Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. It sounds great, but
till
you have to do what Tiger did and live his life as well. Because as we know, we're talking about, you know, Sergio being under the spotlight, and sometimes that pressure has not been great for him. So certainly, if you know, if this was the case, and he was even a more higher profile player, who knows what could happen?
Absolutely. Well, the PGA Tour is continuing this week as well at the Shriners Open down in Las Vegas. One player will not be there, Tony Finau, the first big name, you could say, to test positive for COVID-19. I mean, there's been other big names in the news. Webb Simpson, I forgot. Yeah, well, that's fair. That's classic.
I know.
Classic that Webb Simpson.
That's what happens, though, right?
Just gets forgotten about, as per usual. Like, this guy is so good. And just he'll be on the Ryder Cup next year, and people are like, what? Why is Webb Simpson out there? It's like, dude, he won like 3 times last year. You know, he's top 5 player all of last year. What do you mean, why is he here?
He's probably one of the favorites for this week. He's in the field this week. So
there you go. But, you know, this is obviously the tour. This is the type of stuff they're worried about, is losing those big names. But, you know, I keep seeing videos where you see guys at events and, you know, people like Tiger Woods surrounded by hundreds of people. And it's like, if people like Tiger Woods get it, that it's going to be a problem. And I think we've been lucky. No one has, you know, their career's been gone because of it, or no one's passed away because of it in the sporting world. But, you know, I just think people got to be more careful. You know, it's huge right now. Like, Cam Newton just test positive, miss a game. Yeah. Like, that's devastating for a football season that only has 16 games, but you don't know the long-term effects. This could affect Tony Finau the rest of the year.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's an issue right now, too. I mean, obviously, his test was, you know, pre-tournament. This is part of his pre-screening. But, you know, the PGA Tour is about to have a little bit of a bubble in Las Vegas. And as you know, Las Vegas is not really the town where you want to just sit in your hotel room.
Nope.
So, you know, I could certainly see something happening here, you know. It's definitely a risk, and you know, hopefully nothing happens. I mean, fingers crossed, and hopefully players are you know, as safe as possible. But you know, it's the risk that happens. You know, you're around a lot of people, and certainly, like I said, it's Las Vegas, so you're not always going to want to stay in your room and get room service. Although it's probably a great place to do it, but you know, you'll want to be out and about and maybe hit the casinos or do whatever. And I mean, Vegas has pretty much been open for a while now, so. We'll see what happens this week at TPC Summerlin. You know, I'm trying to think Kevin Na is defending this week. So made all those pots last year, to win the tournament, beat out, Patrick Cantlay in that playoff. Other players that are in the mix here, Bryson DeChambeau played well last year here, was in the top part, and he's back in the field this week. Adam Hadwin, the Canadian, also played well here last year, in the top rung of players. So, we'll certainly see some more stars this week as well. Colin Morikawa. I can't even talk tonight.
No, you're struggling, man. You need help.
I guess I got to get out of the coffee and into the cider here.
That usually helps me, at least.
Yeah. Colin Morikawa is in the field this week, so it's nice to have a few of the stars back, and we've got some decent feature groups. Of course, you know who's going to be in a feature group.
Graham Dillette. Oh, Ricky Fowler. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think the most enjoyable feature group, though, is the Bombers. I mean, you know, they always, most of the PGA Tour events, obviously, when they do their pairings, you know, they're really stick to their protocol as far as, you know, categories and things like that. But, you know, we got a cool feature group this week in the Bombers, and DeChambeau, Cameron Champ, and Matthew Wolf. And that'll be fun to watch, especially in Las Vegas. If the weather heats up and the golf course heats up, these guys will be bombing it.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Michael Gligic for getting in, played in the Monday qualifier, which is crazy. People are like, what do you mean? He's on the PGA Tour. Yeah. Doesn't mean he's got status at every single event.
Short field, too. Yeah.
Was the last guy to submit a score. There's a bunch of guys sitting there with a 64 ready for a playoff. And Glig comes in and says, pack your bags, boys. 63. See you later. I'm heading to Las Vegas. Glig gets in the field. So shout out to Mike Glig. He's is playing. Wow, I can't talk either. Got to drink this Guinness soon. He's playing with big names such as Craig Hocknull and Matt Wilson.
Do you know who Craig Hocknull is?
No. Give me a story about Craig Hocknull.
Craig Hocknull played. He's actually from a guy from down in the States, but he was up here in Canada for a while. Won the Canadian.
He's actually Australian.
I know, but he won the Canadian Club Pro Championship when he was working up here. A little bit of a controversial thing or whatever, but he's been back and forth and been a player over the years. So, yeah, he's well-known within the Club Pro ranks.
Making his fourth PGA Tour start. How he got in the field, did he Monday qualify into this too?
Probably. I didn't see, but chances are he might have got a sponsor's exemption too. You never know.
Well, he has made total on any PGA Tour sanctioned events under $10,000. So I am going to take him to win this week. I think he's a dark horse pick. You should throw money on looking like 45-ish year old Craig Hocknull. Well, we were talking about COVID, right, and how PGA Tour needs to be careful. Well, you know, hockey seasons should be playing right now, and we don't know when it's going to come back. We don't know when the junior hockey is going to come back, how they're going to pull all of this off. And, you know, this guy that we're waiting to interview is probably wondering the exact same thing. When do I get back to work? I mean, he's a big golfer, so he's probably not too worried, but golf season's coming to an end here right now soon, so he's got to get back to work soon. I can't wait to talk with Chris Cook about hockey gear. Before golf gear, I was a big hockey gear nut, collecting hockey gear. You know, try to resell.
I think I got a sense of that when we had Savvy on and you guys were talking about laces.
Taping sticks. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that chat. I'm sure he's a big golf gear nerd as well. How long have you known Chris for?
We have been text buddies for quite some time. He basically reached out on Twitter, and then we just go back and forth all the time talking about golf, different things. We actually haven't met in person, believe it or not, over the years, but have been text buddies for a while. But great guy, well respected in the community. Everybody loves Cookie. Everybody knows Cookie. Worked for the Ottawa Senators, done a bunch of work with Hockey Canada as well, and obviously now the head equipment manager at the Kingston Frontenacs in the Ontario Hockey League. And just loves golf. So we're looking forward to talking to him. All right, we want to welcome to the Tee Talk podcast, Chris Cook, well known to everyone as Cookie, the head equipment manager for the Kingston Frontenacs of the Ontario Hockey League. And you'll hear a lot more about his career in the next few minutes or so, but a big golf guy as well. Welcome to the podcast, Cookie.
Well, thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on tonight's podcast. Listen frequently, and let's get going.
Well, we got you on draft night. I know that's probably terribly inconvenient because I know you probably got your eye on that. But we'll talk hockey in a little bit. But why don't we delve into your golf interest a little bit? I know we've texted a lot in the last couple of years about golf. How did you get involved with golf before we get to hockey?
Well, golf just became a hobby of mine, like especially working on hockey. You know, hockey's done, you know, often in the spring, and while working in hockey, you have most of your summers off. So, you know, to fill the void, you pick up the game of golf. But golf started for me, I guess, when I was a teenager, and just when I gave up my love of baseball and realized I wasn't going to make it anywhere in baseball. So I just took up golf recreationally. I grew up across the street from a golf course when I lived in Ottawa. As my dad used to call it, the Royal and Ancient Pines, a.k.a. Pine View Golf Course in the East End. And so, yeah, I just love the game and continued to play it ever since.
And what's your best score, and what's your game like?
The game's pretty average. You know, I like to play it recreationally. You know, it's competitively, if you know, there's a couple dollars here and there, but average game, I don't know, call it mid 80s on a good day. And I've broken 80 a couple times, but it's nothing to write home about.
You obviously get a chance to, you know, get to travel around a fair bit and, you know, involved with some different things and get to see a few different golf courses. But any particular favorites over the years or even most recently?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a number of favorites, to be honest. I mean, working in the NHL when I was in Ottawa, you know, it would be the odd road trip where we'd get a day off here and there and a couple of the guys would go golfing and I'd get to tag along. And you know, I'm fortunate enough to play Doral in Miami. I played Copperhead, the Copperhead course at Innisbrook in Tampa. Played Heron Bay, former Honda Classic. The Prestonwood Golf Club in Raleigh or Cary, North Carolina, to be specific, which I believe the seniors are playing there next week, maybe. You know, last year I got to play in a tournament in Kamloops, a bunch of some Hockey Canada guys that I know put it on, and we played at Tobiano in Kamloops, which is amazing. A couple of years back, I played at Predator Ridge in Vernon. Yeah, I mean, a lot of great courses here in Ontario I've played too. Like, I just recently played Cobble Beach, but the weather wasn't great, so I didn't get to see the Georgian Bay from every hole, like the commercial says.
Yeah, but I was going to say, was Bob Weeks there for you?
Right. But no, it's a spectacular golf course for sure. And, you know, a favorite of mine is Coketown Woods in Dundas.
So when you are the equipment manager for the Ottawa Senators, right, we've talked to players and we're like, hey, did you bring your golf clubs on the road trips? And all of them, no, I wasn't able to bring them on the road trips. But as the equipment manager, you're the one lugging all the gear around. So are your own clubs coming with you when you're going on road trips to, back in your days with the NHL?
No chance. Just, you know, everything that was all the equipment, you know, it barely fit in our flights at any given time. Like, they had to be packed like sardines. And, you know, that's the last thing you want to jam in the belly of an airplane with a bunch of hockey bags and stick bags and, you know, those traveling cases. You know, the weapons are fragile pieces, as we all know, and it's safer to rent the clubs, you know.
I figured maybe that you would have, you know, like a driver in Spetz's bag and like your wedges over with Alfie, your putt, like spread it across, and then nobody can pick up on it until you get, because you got to empty it all out. So you empty it all out, you put your bag together ahead of the course at the next day. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking, at least.
True. I mean, I guess I could have taken them all out and kind of put them in between all the sticks and, you know, stuff them in the stick bag, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you weren't as desperate as I clearly would have been. Let's talk about you getting into becoming an equipment manager. You obviously said you grew up playing baseball, had a love of baseball. How'd you end up getting into, you know, working the rinks for your career?
Well, to be honest with you, it was kind of like a lot of things nowadays. It's the right place at the right time. You know, growing up in Ottawa, I had a, you know, part-time job as a student going to high school as a security guard at Lansdowne Park. You know, being locally, you all know about Lansdowne Park, where the Rough Riders then and the Red Blacks now and the 67s play. So, you know, as a security guard back then, it was the main place to be. There's so many concerts and sporting events and, you know, PC conventions and anything off the charts. So I did that until I was about 20, and then the Senators came into play, and I was working down in the dressing room area and just started asking the right questions, and lo and behold, they brought me in, and I worked part-time for 8 years just working game nights, taking care of the visiting dressing rooms, the visiting teams coming in, and then a couple of changes in the department happened, in the equipment department. And it was a promotion, and then I was asked to come in as the assistant, and I worked 12 seasons, almost 1,000 games in the NHL as the assistant equipment guy in Ottawa.
So what were the big highlights for you there? I mean, as you said, you know, almost 1,000 games. Were there some moments that really stood out for you as far as being in the position that you were and you know, what the team was doing at that point?
Yeah, I mean, some of the big highlights obviously were, you know, our conference final in the 03-04 season when we lost game 7 against the Devils. 2 minutes to go in that game when, in my mind, it was the best team Ottawa ever had while I was there. I think we had the goods to run through the finals against the Ducks. And, you know, then a few years later, we ended up playing the Ducks in the finals in 07 and lost in 5 games. I think the year after that, we went to Sweden to start the season against the Penguins, played a couple games at the famous Globe Arena in Sweden. Then the All-Star game in 2012 was in Ottawa, so I was fortunate enough to be a part of that as well.
With hockey equipment, how does that translate over to like golf equipment? Do you kind of have the same love for hockey equipment and, you know, nerd out about the actual gear and when it comes in, get excited, similar to all us golf nuts do? Because for me, prior to playing golf, that was my thing. I like collecting all the nice new gear, the new sticks, and looking into all that. And that clearly translated over into my love for hockey. So do you have that same love for both hockey gear and golf gear and able to nerd out over both or not at all?
Well, honestly, not at all. I'd rather look at golf gear and baseball gear and as you say, nerd out over that. The players, they love all the new stuff, right? And you can't even keep up nowadays. You're basically trying to keep up with the Joneses. It's like cell phone and a TV, right? Like the skates and the sticks and, you know, the undergear, it's the same old stuff, but, you know, the flashy paint jobs on both and the new technology, and it's like golf, you know, like whatever shafts you can put in it to make your clubs lighter, stiffer. It's basically the same technology for a hockey stick. And, you know, the True Temper golf shaft company now is heavily involved in hockey sticks, aka the True Hockey Stick. But they've been making hockey sticks longer than a lot of people actually know. They used to have a factory, I believe, in the east end of Ottawa, like a composite factory when composite golf shafts first came into play. And they were making a lot of sticks for a lot of companies out of that a lot of people didn't know.
Well, back in my day working for the Guelph Storm, the equipment manager, the rule was if you needed a stick for any of the staff, you needed to have a 2-4 sitting outside his office thanking him for it. And one of the old sticks that disappeared would go to him, or go to you. What about you? What would it take for a player to show up, a staff member to show up to get an old stick from you at this point if they needed a new one for their men's league team or something?
Well, I don't quite operate quite like Rusty did, right? Is that Rusty that was in golf?
I can't throw him under the table, no.
Right? He retired just recently.
And okay, then it doesn't salt matter. Of the yeah, earth, it was.
Salt of the earth, man. But I don't know. You know, here, you know, the budgets are a lot tighter, right? And I guess all I'd say is bring your wallet.
So how is that transition for you? I mean, Ontario Hockey League obviously got some issues this year. We don't know what's going to happen as far as the season. But, you know, what are the big differences, your job now versus what you did for the Senators? Or is it pretty much the same, just at a different level?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of similarities. I think, you know, the workload is increased, I believe, because, you know, the staffing is a lot different. You know, in the NHL, at any given time, you could have 3 or 4 equipment guys. You'd have 2-3 medical guys and, you know, a massage therapist. So your support staff is huge, right? Where at the junior level, for the most teams, you're just 2 guys. You're the therapist and the equipment guy. And because these kids go to school, you know, you have a morning club where the kids that don't go to school, they come in and work out, and then they go home and have lunch. And then the kids that do go to school, then they show up with the other group at 1 o'clock or 1:30, practice for 2 hours, and then the school kids work out. So your practice days are like 10-hour days, where in the pros, you know, as a support staff, you could be you can be out in 5-6 hours, like all said and done, everything back in their stalls ready to go for tomorrow, right? So the difference is the manpower and the extra additional hours on top of that.
And what was it like your time with Hockey Canada? Was it similar? You know, you've worked some big tournaments. What were some of your favorite tournaments back then? But also, what's the experience like when you're doing those big events?
Anytime you get to, you know, work for your country at any international level, it's an honor for sure. The first tournament I did was the 2017 under 17 tournament in Dawson Creek, British Columbia. It's called the World Under 17 Showcase or whatever. And then the following year was the Hlinka Gretzky tournament, which is basically the under 18s. And then the following spring, I did the under 18 worlds in Sweden. So we were fortunate enough to win gold at the Hlinka Gretzky, the first ever Hlinka Gretzky tournament. That was in Edmonton. It's amazing just to work for Hockey Canada in general, just the way that the stage is set and the international competition, and you always have the best of the best players from not only our country, but all the countries. And, you know, it's just elite hockey. And so,
yeah. So, yes. I mean, then, you know, we're sitting here tonight, you know, the draft is on. You're able to watch a lot of these players develop, not only at the junior level, but as you said, at those Hockey Canada events. You know, how much do you keep tabs on those guys, and how much pride do you see, or, you know, do you have personally when you see some of those players come up, and maybe they're ones that you picked out and said, hey, that guy's got the goods, and maybe somebody else didn't think that, but what are your thoughts on that?
For sure. I mean, the last two, obviously this draft and the draft before, is a lot of the kids that I've been fortunate enough to work with the past three events. So I've seen a lot of these kids, you know, from 16-year-old to 18-year-old. So it's a 3-year gap, and you see how they just mature and grow up, and their skill level, you know, goes on and on. And, you know, we have to do, always have to do post tournament reports, you know, based on the player, the individual, the human part, the physical part, the person itself. And, you know, I look back at the draft earlier tonight when Jamie Drysdale was picked 6th, I believe, to the Ducks, right? I think he went to Anaheim. And, you know, for 2 years I said he's going to be a top 5 pick. And I was close. But, you know, I looked at him as, you know, an Erik Karlsson 2.0, just because he's a small body. He's a right shot. He controls the flow of the ice because he's an unbelievable skater. And it's just fun to watch the kids that you've worked with get drafted into the NHL.
Well, before we wrap it up, we want to make sure we talk about the season coming up. And, you know, obviously junior hockey is on pause right now. We're not really too sure when everything will be launched. We do know the World Juniors are going to happen. But what's the latest you're hearing on when you'll be back? And hopefully we're going to be seeing junior hockey soon.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, you guys know about as much as I do. You know, Twitter seems to break everything every day, but you know, we're planning to start training camp in the middle of November, and with the hopes of having a season start December the 1st. Obviously, with everything that's going on around us in this province, for sure, things might get delayed a little bit, depending on how we can, you know, keep all the cases, you know, aside. But whether it's December, whether it's January, you know, we're hopeful to play, and we just hope that day comes sooner than later.
Well, one last question I had for you. You mentioned Erik Karlsson, who is, you know, become a diehard golfer. His ability is not maybe as good as Alfie yet, but he's getting there. They're both members of the same club. But, you know, I forgot to maybe ask you, in all those years around the, you know, the NHL, the OHL, Hockey Canada, is there somebody that you maybe played with or you think was, you know, probably the best golf talent that you saw amongst that group?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, there's a lot of hockey players that are gifted golfers. And I think it comes, you know, part and parcel to the game of hockey and golf. Like, the similarities are endless. But the best player on the golf course was Alfie, for sure. I mean, I was fortunate enough to play a couple times with him. You know, the time at Doral, I played with him and Chris Neal and our Molson rep at the time. It's quite a long story to tell you, but I'll tell you that over a beer another time. But, you know, I played with Alfie's brother, who's just as good as a golfer. Yep. They're both members at the Royal Ottawa, which I think Eric's a member at the Royal, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, for years. I mean, guys you wouldn't even think that are, you know, good golfers that are, you know, average players. Like, a lot of these guys are single-digit handicaps, and it's but yeah, Alfie for sure takes the cake.
Any other particular notes as far as, you know, I guess one thing I'm always curious about is a lot of people don't really understand maybe, you know, the nuances of your job. You know, we talked a little bit about the hours and stuff like that, but, you know, could you give kind of a basic rundown of maybe some of the skills or things that you have to have? Because it's obviously got to be a myriad of them. And the reason I asked is I had a couple of listeners after I posted about you coming on, they're curious about your job. They see the guys in the NHL, they see them, you know, on the bench grabbing the sticks or whatever, but they don't know really much else that goes on. I mean, you're not just there to catch stinky gloves, right?
No. And it's funny that you asked that, but I mean, there are so many people that have no idea what equipment managers do, whether it's hockey or baseball or football or whatever, because everything is, it's behind the scenes, it's under the stadiums, it's behind closed doors, really. And nobody ever gets the opportunity to see what we do. And, you know, it's my home for, you know, seven months, 8 months of the year. And, you know, we do anything from, you know, everybody's laundry to sewing jerseys, mending jerseys. Like, you know, you go in the corners, you rip your sleeve. Well, it needs to be fixed before you can play again. Or, especially in a fight, you know, they make everything so much lighter now that, I mean, we've all seen a game where somebody grabs a jersey by the neck and it just shreds right through the middle. But at the junior level, you don't have backup jerseys to quickly throw on another jersey, right? So that 5 minutes in the box, I'm running to my equipment room just to sew up a jersey and get it by. You know, the biggest change in the hockey skate department, if you've seen on the games where guys, you know, lose an edge now. Well, before they used to have to leave the ice, go to the equipment room, wait, get your skate sharpened before you go out. You could miss a shift, miss two shifts. But, you know, the technology has changed drastically, and all equipment guys now have spare blades for every player. You just click them in and out, and they never miss a shift. It's truly amazing. And being an old school guy, it took me a couple of years to, you know, turn the page on it. But I'll tell you, it's a blessing from my point of view, the player's point of view, especially the coach's point of view, because they don't miss any time on the ice.
You're basically the caddy for the entire team. And we're pro caddy on this podcast. So, We appreciate you coming on, Chris. We love the stories. Can't wait to hear about all the other ones you weren't able to tell on this podcast. We look forward to watching this season. Obviously, go Frontenacs, go, and hopefully we get the season going soon. So thanks again for joining us.
Well, fellas, it's a pleasure, and thanks again for having me. And you're welcome. Welcome to come down anytime at the rink, a little tour, and I'll show you guys behind the scenes.
All right. Thanks, Cookie. Loved having you on the show. Great stuff there from him. Love to talk a little hockey, talk a little golf. Great guy, eh?
Absolutely. As you heard, I'm a gear nerd for hockey. Well, not many more, because I eventually grew some self-awareness and realized I was awful at hockey. Hopefully that doesn't happen for golf one day. But yeah, similar with that. You know, love golf gear. That kind of was my next thing. Fortunately, golf gear is more expensive than hockey gear. But yeah, it was a great interview. Clearly loves golf, clearly loves hockey, and hopefully he can get back to work soon with the Kings of Frontenacs.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, let's get moving on here. I got a little game for you. I've been trying to dig up a few over these last few shows, but I try to come up with something a little bit different this week. So I've came up with one called Who Wins. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick, I'm going to give you two players, an LPGA Tour player and a PGA Tour player, and I can weigh in on this too. We're going to pick one, and they're going to face off, and they're going to play golf against each other, and we're going to decide who do we think would win between the two. And they would obviously play off their respective length golf courses, but you know, you can basically say what you like about the one player, the other player, or maybe just why you think they would be better than the other player. How's that?
I accept this idea. I think we're running down a interesting slope here, but I will play your game, and let's go.
All right, first one, we're going to take the top-ranked Canadians on tour, Brooke Henderson and Mackenzie Hughes. Who would win between the two of those in an 18-hole match?
Man, this one's tough. You know, Brooke is an average driving distance is long for the tour. So she's around 16 this year, which is decent. I don't think Mac is really that long off the tee from a men's perspective. Mm-hmm. So if they're playing their respective tees, you're going to get an advantage from Brooke. That being said, Brooke's game with the wedges is what's going to kill her usually. So I got to go with Mac on this one. Brooke's our girl, but I'm taking Mac on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as competitive nature, I mean, they're both super competitive players, but I think Brooke is a little bit more fiery. I think she's got a little bit more of a competitive edge to her, although Mac is a little bit sneaky. But that said, I love Mac's putting. I love how he putts. And really, when it comes down to it, a great putter is a match for anyone. And I think the weakness here is for Brooke. She struggles. She admittedly struggles on her own with her putting on occasion. And I think Mac would be able to sneak it past her here in this match.
Love it.
All right, next one. This one's going to be fun, especially we're talking about Las Vegas this week. These are two Las Vegas residents, and they date. Mm. One's in the LPGA Tour. One... Yeah, he's getting there as far as where he's prominent on the tour, but you know, he will be one of the featured players this week at the Shriners Open because he is from Las Vegas. Maverick McNealy and Danielle Kang.
Danielle Kang. Maverick McNealy. I'm just looking at this guy's face on PGA Tour and he's not beating Danielle Kang. No, I have to look up like this. I had to look up if this guy even existed when you even.
Oh, come on.
It's been on the PGA Tour for a long time. But no, I'm giving it to Danielle Kang. This guy, he's only got one full season out on the PGA Tour, which was last year. Was able to maintain his card with three top tens. But Danielle Kang is one of the best in the world as you know on the LPGA Tour. So not even close for me. Danielle Kang.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go with you on that one. Mav's a stud. He's definitely an up-and-coming player, but Danielle's well-established. And, you know, again, another player that's feisty, knows how to make putts. As you said, a major champion, you know, getting a bunch of wins already this year. I don't think if they played this match right now, I don't think Mav has a chance. All right, this one is going to be interesting. We're going to get into a couple of long bombers, including one who will try not to make you pronounce her name, but
Aria
I will.
Jutanagarn.
Oh, very good. Jutanagarn, pretty good. So false. Aria Jutanagarn versus Rory McIlroy, which I think is a match that a lot of people would love to see.
Oh, I would love to watch it as long as Aria has to hit driver. I think we have to move her back a little bit. She's averaging 255 off the tee. That's pretty much strictly with a 3-wood in her hand. Very Henrik Stenson-esque in her game. This is tough, but I'm going to take Rory on this one based on what I'm seeing come out of Camp Rory this week with this 190 mile per hour ball speed. That's going to be really intimidating. I think Arya could just close her eyes and be like, I don't really care, Rory McIlroy, but it doesn't matter how far back you put him. He's going to be hitting past you, and that's just going to kill. That's going to kill you. So I got to take Rory. I mean, at one point we were talking about if Rory was going to pass Jack Nicklaus for majors. So Arya's great, one of the best as well in the world for women, but it's got to be Rory for me.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me. I mean, I love Rory. I mean, I'm a big fan of his style of play. Does get a little dodgy with the putter every once in a while, dodgy with the short game. If I was going to say one match and one match only, I'd go Rory. But I'm actually going to sneak over to the Arya side and say if they were going to play like, you know, 10 matches, I think she might get a little bit ahead. I think she's just a little bit more consistent than Rory is. And I think maybe she would have that match that time that they're going to play. So just to be opposite of you and not stick with the same thing, I'll go Arya for this one. Love her short game. She works with Gareth Rafalski, the Canadian, the Irish-born Canadian resident. And I love how she plays around the greens. And you know what? They're two great personalities as well, which makes it really hard here to try to, you know, root against anyone. I think it would be a great match, and this would be a fun one to see.
That's fair. I think the advantage for Arya is that, say this was just like a TV match, and let's say they actually had money on the line and it wasn't just charity stuff. I don't think Rory would care enough, where for her, beating Rory is her advantage, where Rory beating Arya, probably he's not going to think much of it. He's got four major champions, you know, all the money in the world, 190 mile per hour ball head speed, 190 mile per hour ball head speed. 190 per hour ball head speed. This guy's hitting bombs. What's going on here, Rory? You're supposed to get, you know what? I saw a great tweet. It said, stop being long drive, Rory, and go back to being fat Rory. And I'm all for fat Rory coming back. I got another tweet later I got to talk about. We'll probably get to in just a second, I have a feeling. But yeah, no, I'm taking Rory. You're taking Arya. Let's move on.
All right, two more here. Let's head down under and go with the Aussies. One of the players that we just talked about, Hannah Green, the defending champion of the KPMG Women's PGA Champion, and another major champion from down under, the Masters winner, Adam Scott. Who do you take in this match?
Okay, I'm taking Adam Scott, and you could put anybody, if it's one-on-one, you could put anyone beside Adam Scott. I'm taking Adam Scott. Here's why. This isn't because Hannah Green's a woman. You put man, woman, any adult beside Adam Scott, and they will be distracted by the beauty of his golf swing, the looks of this man, his body. This guy is ripped from head to toe. He is God's gift to earth, sculpted with his bare hands. Throw that golf. You're not beating him. You're screwed before you get there.
You thinking Hannah's going to be a little distracted?
Of course. You know, Nate's going to forget her golf bag. He's going to be walking right as close as he can to Adam Scott just to get a sniff of his cologne. So Hannah's got to carry her own golf bag on top of that. She's got no chance to beat Adam Scott in a one-on-one match. And that's it. You can't change my mind, but you can try if you want.
I don't think I'm going to. I think, you know, Hannah's obviously got a major win, but Adam Scott's pedigree, his record is something else. And you know what? Maybe if, you know, you took the long wand out of his hand and you made him putt with the short putter, she might have a better chance. But I think
he doesn't need a putter in this match. he doesn't need golf clubs. He's going to win.
The golf ball will just like jump in the hole based on
him. Exactly. He's Jesus, man. Like this guy, it's not close.
Somebody's a fanboy.
Absolutely. Speaking of that, so Eddie Pepperell on the weekend tweeted out that he said that it was poured rain at the, I guess it was the previous weekend, sorry, on the European.
Oh, the Renaissance Club with the Scottish Open.
I guess it was this weekend, which I guess we can get to after the game here. And it just poured and poured. And Eddie Pepperell was in the mix right until the end, but said that was the wettest he's ever been coming off the golf course. And Amanda Rose replied, "Now you know how I feel after watching Adam Scott play." Wow. So that was hilarious. Amanda Rose is worth a follow. She's hilarious golf media member, does it her way, and I appreciate that. And that is exactly why I'm picking Adam Scott. He's distracting. He's got a beautiful golf swing, and he's got the game. Doesn't even need golf clubs. He's beating Hannah Green. Give me my last one because I'm killing this.
All right. We're going to stay on the down under, but we're going to put a little New Zealand, a little Kiwi in the mix. Lydia Ko versus Jason Day to wrap this up.
Okay. I'm picking this. This one's different. All right. I'm taking a tie. Here's how they tie.
A tie? No, they can't have a tie.
No, listen here. This is how they tie. So Jason Day succumbs to injury during said match and cannot finish it. And Lydia Ko's father pulls her out of the tournament saying she cannot play Jason Day. He's not at her caliber. And there's a tie. The media are standing around, have no idea what's going on. And that is the end of the match. Tie.
That, you know what? That's a plausible scenario. I will give you that. But we're going to make them play. And, you know, I love Lydia Ko. I'm probably with you, though. You know, Jason Day at some point is going to get vertigo during this match or snap his back or, you know, fall down or something like that. But I'll take Ko. We'll finish with that. So thanks for
injury,
paying.
Father pulling you out of the tournament tie. Best TV possible.
Yeah, we're going to have to play this one again. All right. Thanks. That is who wins our first time. I don't think it's going to be the last time.
I think I won. But that European Tour, the Scottish Open, that was a great tournament right to the end.
Yeah.
Tommy Fleetwood.
That golf course is amazing, by the way.
It is, absolutely. Tommy Fleetwood won. Now, you're probably thinking, no, he didn't. Absolutely.
No, he didn't.
No, absolutely he did. I'm not going to mention the actual winner, but they have been disqualified because they actually played the entire tournament with iron head covers on. And for me, that does not count as a win on any
Scotland,
tour.
You got to stay warm, man.
No. Aaron Rye, I believe, is his name. He should be his... That title should be stripped from the record. He should actually lose his European Tour card status. That is amateur hour. That is high handicap, and I don't appreciate it. Tommy Fleetwood gets the win. Congrats to Tommy Fleetwood.
Well, here's the thing. When you play that golf course in North Berwick, and it's a little bit closer to Gullen, Archerfield is another place right next door, and then Muirfield is actually right next door. If you watch this broadcast, the open land that Muirfield actually owns where they don't have holes, where they could actually build another golf course, it's better land than their course is on currently. It's right in behind them there. And, you know, a couple of these holes along the cliffside, it can get pretty chilly. Obviously got pretty wet there. Probably had the iron covers on there just to keep his clubs warm. So, you know what? Yeah, I know. You know what, though? I will say this. Fleetwood had a great interview. You know, a broadcaster was kind of baiting him a little bit and say, hey, you know, this is tough conditions, blah, blah, blah. And he basically just said, hey, man, you know, I'm not complaining. I mean, we're playing for all this money, you know. So
he's
what?
The best guy.
This is what happens. You know, we go out and we just do this, and that's our job. So he wasn't complaining about it at all, and much respect for him for that.
Interview the caddy. Let me know how he's feeling.
Like, yeah, that'll be a different story.
Yeah. Ian Poulter's, it was Ian Poulter's caddy, I believe, took a video of him trying to get his shoes dry. They'd been in front of the fire since they got off the golf course. The next day, still were wet, basically had to buy new shoes. And just last thing to note, when you Google Aaron Rye, the first thing you see is Aaron Rye iron covers on golf.com. So that's where it's at, I believe. I don't even have to read the article. I'm sure they're going to talk about how that win doesn't count, because it doesn't count. You can't win with iron covers. So congrats to Tommy Fleetwood. Great guy. That's it. I don't need to talk anymore about Aaron Rye. I'm just so disappointed. I feel bad. Like, caddies have enough to do. They have enough to do. It's pouring rain. The wettest round ever, according to Eddie Pepperell. Yeah, and now you got to deal with iron head covers on top of that, on top of keeping the bag dry.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
And there's no place to hide out there, believe me, except for the long grass on that golf course. It's a tough test. Even for them to shoot 11 under out there is pretty damn impressive. The year I played it, I think it was 2014, they were looking to attract the Scottish Open there at that point. And I played it actually a couple of days before some of the officials were coming to have a look at the golf course. So they had the rough grown up really, really high. I'm not sure I actually finished all the holes. I enjoyed it very much.
I think
but...
I finished all the holes in a normal round. But
yeah, so for those guys to, you know, to shoot 11 under out there, that's pretty impressive. And Robert Rock, super impressive as well. Obviously, that golf swing, so good. That hair, so good. I'm sure you admired
perfection
that.
Perfection of cool. What does that mean?
Nothing. I'm sure you admired his swing. I didn't really, yeah.
Okay, shots at my baldness. No one's off the table in this tournament. Yeah, no, Robert Rock is the coolest. He should have won just for being cool. If Adam Scott was on the field, he would have won. But why don't we grab a quick break and hit the mailbag and then wrap up this episode, Scott, because we got a little bit off the rails there.
All right, welcome back. It's the mailbag, the segment we talk about every week. We'd love to get your questions in here. We've got some good ones this week, something a little different, a little bit interesting. So, let's get started here. Someone says, I am considering an indoor simulator setup at home, but I have limited space. Do you think it's worth doing if I have no room to swing a driver?
I don't know. You get to swing something throughout the winter, so why not? I guess the worth part is one thing. If you're... Say you're going like, oh, okay, I'm dropping like $50,000. I'm getting the TrackMan and all of that. Probably not, no. But if it's just something to swing, yeah, absolutely. We all wish we could be swinging at some point during the winter. So, yeah, why not? I guess it depends on how much you're spending, though. But I would kill for it.
Yeah, I mean, anything just to keep moving in the wintertime, swat a golf ball. I mean, when the snow is coming down, I think any of us would want to be, you know, have the opportunity to do that. I know it's probably not as fun to get, you know, everybody likes to get the big stick out there and hit the ball, maybe play a full round. But if you can only do it because you've got space with irons, I mean, I would be down for that. But I think you're right. It really depends how much it's going to cost you in the end. All right, on to the next one here. Do you think the Masters will digitally add azaleas for the November broadcast? That one's
that's good.
I mean, they obviously add bird sounds all the time, so
yeah, no. I won't put anything past them. They might add fans in there and remove people too. Yeah, I don't think they will do that, but you never know with Augusta. It's crazy. I saw a photo of like 12 days ago, the whole place was brown and people were like, that is awful. I was like, it looks great to me. I love it. Brown it. I don't care. Now it's right back to green. They probably spray painted it just to make it look good. So you never know with Augusta National what they're doing in there. Pretty much Area 51 in terms of the secrets. So who knows?
Pretty much. And I think the azaleas can have a late season bloom, but I don't think it's this late. So like you said, I mean, I went to the Masters one time where they had a storm overnight and they rebuilt an entire bathroom overnight. So, I mean, these guys have unlimited budget. They can do anything. So, watch out for anything once this broadcast hit. You never know what's going to happen. All right. If you won a pro event, would you celebrate with beer or champagne?
Yes. Yes, I would.
That is the answer right there. That is undoubtedly the answer. I don't think it's an option of one or two. It's a matter of what you would add on to this as well. So
exactly. Yes. Yes, I would.
I think we're on the same page here. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of a choice.
Don't think I'd be picky that night.
Yeah, if they're thinking we have to make a choice here, I'm sorry, we're not going to pick. That's like trying to pick a favorite child at this point.
Fair enough.
All right. Will golf equipment manufacturers ever catch up on their back orders? I tried to order a driver in June. It took until last month to get it. Will this trend continue? Any thoughts on that? I have a few.
Yeah, that sucks. That's too bad. Sorry to hear that to start. I think what you'll see is people, they're running out of the old orders. So you'll see a higher volume of orders of the new stuff. So they might never ever get caught up on the old stuff, but the new stuff, absolutely. And you're going to hear a lot of announcements of new stuff coming soon. But that's a bad experience. Sorry you went through that, but hopefully with the new stuff, you don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case. And part of the reason that's going to be the case as well is that a lot of the major manufacturers have moved production for a number of things. So I'm hearing several manufacturers have now taken their head production out of China. A lot have gone to Vietnam now. where they can control it a little bit better, a little bit different, obviously because of the COVID circumstances. So I think you're right. What they're going to do is obviously they're forecasting ahead. They're going to increase their volumes within the new product and try to get ahead of it. So hopefully, yeah, that one really sucks. I mean, if you think about it, if you're in Canada right now, I mean, our golf season is certainly waning. You know, you're just getting your new driver that you've spent all the money on, got fitted for, you've been dying to play it, and you might only get a few rounds in. So that is unfortunate, but hopefully that's not something that we see going forward. All right. I have a bet with a friend over who will have a higher finish at the Masters, Rory or JT. Any thoughts to help me decide?
T10, T7, T5, T21 versus T39, T22, T17, T12. The first one is Rory McIlroy. He has more top 10s than he doesn't at Augusta. Give me Rory McIlroy all day. He's going to figure it out. I know everyone's still, you know, have some PTSD about him hitting it into people's living rooms on that Sunday. He will get it done at Augusta one day. Maybe it's this year. Probably not. You know, his game, he's probably not working that much on it. 190 mile per hour ball head speed. So maybe he is. But yeah, no, I don't think so. It's got to be Rory for me all day.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you watch this guy play this golf course, it seems like it's built for him. And, you know, obviously he hasn't had the results that everybody has wanted so far. But at some point, you've got to think he's got to get it done. And, you know, JT's obviously got one major championship, but Rory's got four. Any thoughts on help you decide? Just take Rory. That's really what it comes down to. I mean, if you're sprinkling cash on this, it's much easier to take Rory over
also,
JT.
Also, that being said, like if we knew what we were talking about in terms of betting money on golf, we wouldn't be on this podcast. So who knows? Probably, you know what? The way my year's going on sprinkling money around, whether it's football or golf, fade me. Go with the opposite. Pick JT. You'll be put $1 million on him. You'll become rich.
It is 2020. God knows what's going to happen.
Exactly.
All right. Last one here. What music selections would you guys go for on the golf course?
All right. I'm not a big music guy on the golf course. Personally, I've tried to get into it a little bit, but when it is, give me some country out on the golf course. Big country guy on the golf course. Can't go too heavy.
On the golf course.
Oh, like, I'm country all the time, but like on the golf course, that's what I need. Something like some light country out on the golf course, some Zach Brown, you know, just something good, easy, light. I'm not getting too caught up in the rhythm as a musician. Sometimes like I'll get too caught up and I'll be standing over my tee shot and I'll be hearing the good drum line or, you know, a harmony and I'll stop focusing on the golf. So it really throws me off my game. So I need something simple to, if I'm listening to music on the golf course.
Would it like really affect your golf swing, like the rhythm of your swing or anything? I never really thought about that.
I don't think it does. I mean, it probably doesn't even actually affect anything. I just stop focusing on the golf ball in my golf swing and thinking about my golf swing. I just start focusing on the music. So I don't know. It's not for me because of that. Where other people, they can tune it out. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, anything that I do, I think would be fairly background. I mean, it's not something that I really want to be, you know, intense about. I'm not like at a concert or something. So, again, same thing as you, something like wouldn't be country, but, you know, something probably Canadian, you know, default for me is always, you know, something like the Hip or.
The Hip. Yeah, that would work. Yeah.
You know, something like that. But again, nothing too intense, nothing too crazy. It's just sort of on there. It's sort of background noise, not disturbing anyone else and just sort of, you know, sets the scene for whatever else is going on. So I think that's about as far as I could go with a music selection. I wouldn't really, you know, kind of pin it down totally to, hey, this is my soundtrack. So
yeah, I remember one time Buddy was playing like System of a Down, just like,
oh my,
and like I can't do it. Like I was probably trying to swing so hard that day just to keep I said like music's one thing, golf's another thing for me. They both play big parts of my life and had kind of miniature success in both, background roles in both, I guess you could say. And so I kind of keep them separate. I don't know. I'm weird.
So,
it's me, man.
So
it's
what do you think would be worse on a golf course? If you rolled around and some guy all of a sudden comes up with a cart and maybe it's in a housing development where, you know, the people can hear the music. Is it, what's worse, death metal or gangster rap? What do you think would be worse?
For me, the rap. I'd rather hear the metal. Well, I have a musical background at some point and a long time ago and that kind of heavier stuff. So I'm all for it. I've never been big into rap. I think the lyrics are a little bit more vulgar if you're in a neighborhood. Here's the thing with music for me. Like, I was out at a golf course and it was like a fun, you know, nothing special golf course. And I could hear guys blast the music two holes over. But everybody was kind of doing it that day. And that day didn't really matter. I was like, okay, if everyone's doing it, it's fine. It's when it's like inconsistent. I personally believe if you're playing music, keep it to your own cart. The fairway next over shouldn't hear you. And if you get near him, just to turn it down to be respectful, but you know, some golf courses should just own that. Be that fun golf course where everyone can be loud and, you know, belligerent and have a good time. But and it's fun for maybe a couple days a year, but I can't do it every single time.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But I thought that might be an interesting question because I've certainly heard a variety over the years, and you know, sometimes you know you hear it like you said from afar, and that's not maybe a great thing, especially if you're, you know, you might be offending somebody else as well. So, all right, thanks everyone. That's the mailbag for this week. Keep your questions coming in. Usually put out the call early in the week on social media, on Twitter, on Instagram for questions. Been great the last little while though. I've actually had people sending in questions before I even put the call out, but that shouldn't stop you anyways. Just keep sending them in. If we don't get to them this week, we can get to them to the next week. So thanks very much.
Awesome. Well, one last question everyone asks is, I need to get better at my golf game. So Scotty, you got to give me the tip of the week before I wrap things up. What do you got?
All right. Last thing here. I was out on the weekend watching a junior tournament, elite juniors, kind of running around, having a look at how they were playing. One thing that I noticed a lot, and this is something that a lot of people can take from this, is that these players, a lot of them had great golf swings. And it was very clear that they spend a lot of time on their golf swings, trying to make them look perfect, trying to make them look great. What I didn't see was a lot of good short games. And what I saw in a lot of the short games were a lot of people not really paying attention to them. They're very careless about it, the shots and the short games, be it the putts, be it the chips. You've got to give the same level of attention and respect to those shots as you do on your full shots. These are just important, if not more, as far as scoring is concerned. So make sure that you've got your planning that you're going to be doing about playing those shots, your pre-shot routines, thinking about how you're going to play them. Don't just get up there and go, well, you know, it's a 10-yard chip. Just go up there and smack it. I mean, you end up being disappointed some of the time. So don't be careless about these shots. Spend as much time worrying about them as you would your full game and full game shots. And I think you'll get more out of your game rather than just perfecting a good golf swing all the time.
I love it. Short game's going to save you. Putting, chipping, that's what saves you. You know, your golf swing looking pretty doesn't really do too much unless you're Adam Scott. Then it makes you a lot of money, breaks hearts, and wounds both men and women alike.
Apparently.
To a complete abyss of distraction. Sorry. Why don't we wrap up this episode, folks? Thanks, Chris, for joining us for the interview. We hoping the season gets going soon for the Kingston Frontenacs. Speaking of hockey, I got to wrap up this podcast. My Leafs are about to draft their first pick in the first round, somebody that will probably never become anything and only lead to more disappointment in my life. Scotty, any final words before we end this episode?
No, I appreciate it. That was a great one. Enjoyed the hockey tie-in always and really looking forward to next week and our next guest on the show.
Yeah, Mel and Dez next week. That's going to be exciting. Can't wait to talk about all the party stories, how much sleep they got after, you know, that win last week at the ShopRite. And can't wait for the PGA this week. The KPMG down in Philadelphia. Can't wait. Looking forward to that. Hannah Green looks to defend with Nate Blasco on the bag. Until then, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast as per usual. We will be back next week. Chat with you then. Like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.